I want to tell you, I missed you people last week.
Oh,
I miss this room when I'm out of this room. Because this room is loaded with good vibrations. And I had the fortune, and sometimes the misfortune, to be out in the world. And this year, at Camp Shalom in Malibu, where I go every Memorial Day weekend, there was an atmosphere there this time that I was not comfortable with, and was an atmosphere of fear, because it became political, and fear came in. And that's what the world is outside, is always fear. The world is fear-based. So this became fear-based, and I'll give you a few quick little highlights of it. I run a little cafe out there for them. It's absolutely free. I put out all this junk food. But everyone that came by kept saying, what are you going to do about the raccoons? What are you going to do about the raccoons? Because there are raccoons there. And I said, well, I've talked to them. And I forbid them to come in this area. And I leave the food out all night. No raccoons came in the area. I was walking back to my cabin, and a raccoon was in a tree with a white bag, opening up the white bag and dipping into it with his hand just like a human, you know. You know, if they had a thumb, they'd take
they
over the world. They don't have the whole thumb.
Wow.
If they had the whole thumb like we did, they would run the world and we'd be someplace else. But anyway, that was the fear that kept coming in. Aren't you afraid of the raccoons? No, see, I'm not afraid of anything. Then I do a little meal for them, and the fire alarms went off. Not because of my cooking, they were very sensitive fire alarms. Well, what are you going to do about that, Dallas? I said, watch me. I just put them all down. I unhooked them. Then it was, aren't you afraid of fire, Dallas? You'll have to put those back. My goodness, you're going to sleep here. And then they'll go, I said, no, I'm not afraid of fire. So it was one thing after the other like that. Then, you know, it was a little drizzly and overcast. And they have a pool party on Sunday. And it was really, that was the worst day that clouds came in. You could just see them coming over the mountain, coming over the mountain. So I'm sitting there, and they're all complaining, well, we won't have the pool party, won't have the pool party. I said, oh, yeah, there'll be a pool party. I said, watch this. I'll make the clouds go away and the sun come out. So I sat there and concentrated. The clouds went away and the sun came out. How am I able to do those things? You're able to do it also. I have no doubt. You see, you can never let doubt come in. As soon as you doubt something, it's gone. Did you raise
your hand? I was just wondering how you knew that you were creating these things.
Oh, I know I create everything, young man.
But I mean, how do you know?
What do you mean, how do I know?
Well, maybe it's something else, somebody else. Maybe you just coincidences.
No.
No? Okay.
This is your first time here.
Yes.
This is a metaphysical teaching. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Well, I'll explain that to you. In metaphysics, there's no such thing as a coincidence. There can be no such thing as a coincidence.
Okay.
So we'll get into that a little more so that you understand that. But anyway, the point was that we leave this room that's filled with wonderful vibrations and a wonderful thought atmosphere. And there's lots of faith in this room. Now, that does not necessarily mean faith in God. But there's faith here. Outside of this room, there is fear. And that's why you're uncomfortable many times outside in the world itself. Because the world teaches fear. And this teaching, metaphysics, does not teach fear. It teaches faith. Faith in what? Faith in yourself. So if I have faith in myself, I know I did it. and I'm willing if you want to give credit to us. But I have told this story, and you're new. Anything that happens good with a 100-mile radius of me, I take credit for.
Why only 100 miles?
Well, I haven't expanded out, but I could.
So you're limiting yourself.
I'm limiting myself, but I'm practicing. I'm doing one step at a time. You know, if I had the mind of Gandhi, I could conquer a nation.
There you go. We all have areas we all know.
But I'm doing it slowly and confidently, so doubt doesn't come into it. So with that said, this is a metaphysical teaching for the new people. We have several new faces here. And the name of this course or class is Prosperity and Abundance, Including Money. Because we all need money. Money is freedom. Money is also God in action. You have a much better life with money. I have a friend that says to me, Dallas, I've been poor and I've been rich. And I like rich better. And we can all be rich. We can all have that money coming to us, the prosperity and the abundance coming. And that's what this class teaches people. And the people who have come long enough and stayed with it and didn't dabble in it have been able to produce that in their lives. Because we're manifesting through our consciousness. And if you have a rich consciousness, you'll have a rich life. It's all done with your mind. It's all done with your thinking. And that's what metaphysics is all about, teaching you how to think correctly. Because we've never been taught to think correctly. Does that help you? Okay. So, with that said, we'll begin, as we always do, with spiritual mind treatment. And when I use the word spiritual mind treatment, it's just a form of prayer. It's an organized form of prayer. We are taking time out to affirm or reaffirm what the universe already knows about us. I will do this in the first person. And all those who are willing may take it for themselves in the first person. And this is what I know, believe, and accept for myself. I am one with the only life there is. I am one with the life of God. I am one with the life of the universe. And I use that life to produce in my life all the wonderful things that I desire. And I use it right here and right now to bring health and happiness and wealth to me. And I let that be so, and so it is. Now, is everyone still doing their affirmations? Mm-hmm. Good. Do you do affirmations?
Do I?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay. And are they working for you?
They have been, yes.
Well, they are. So then why would you think that I would have doubt?
Well, I wasn't thinking anything. I was just asking a question.
Oh. I know. Because you think I may be pompous.
It's the yellow shirt.
All right. Tonight we're going to talk about guilt and shame. We have talked many times about love, and we've talked about forgiveness. We've talked about many things in this room. But guilt and shame are two of the things that hold us back the most from getting what we want in this world. Guilt and shame, by the way, are man-made. They're not a natural emotion. Animals show no guilt or shame unless they come in contact with a human being. And then they learn shame and guilt. Other than that, they do not know what shame and guilt is. All shame and all guilt is learned. And you learn it in that world outside. And you learn it from your family. Now, we have all kinds of guilt. We have Catholic guilt. We have Jewish guilt. We have Baptist guilt. We have mother guilt.
We have mother
Why?
Guilt.
We have guilt all around us all the time. Why is that, do you think? Why do we have to live in guilt? Guilt was invented to control people. It was invented to control people. And certainly most of the churches know how to do that. And mothers know how to control you with a little bit of guilt. Let's give them guilt and they'll behave themselves. But guilt is in the world itself. Somebody asked me at dinner tonight, why do these different things happen? We are always born into a conversation that is already going on. We are born into an atmosphere, a thought atmosphere, that's already here. So we pick up on this. How many people, and I know Wesley will know this one, remembers on a hill far away? Stood an old rugged cross.
The emblem of suffering and shame.
The emblem of suffering and shame. And we see a cross everywhere, don't we? And people like to wear them around their neck. If I can, you know, that baffles me. First of all, the cross was used to crucify people. This man we call Jesus was not the only one that was crucified. In that day and age, that's how they got rid of people, like hung them on a cross. So it's a torture device. And we look at it all the time, don't we? And what do you think that does to our mind? You see, symbols in our society do more to us than anything else. And when we see the symbol of the cross, what do we immediately think? Oh, suffering and guilt. And it's there, and no one does anything about it. And do you remember we used to really do Jewish people in, because we said, well, you're the ones who killed Jesus. Remember the Pope finally said, oh, no, that's not, you know, that's it. He forgave them for doing that.
What a guy.
Yeah, in the end. Great. Wasn't he great?
Yeah.
So this is what you have to think when you're thinking guilt. I took my Aunt Catherine, I think she was 90 at the time, through a drugstore, and she wanted to go down the candy aisle with a cart. And she just kept throwing candy in the cart. And I said, Aunt Catherine, don't you feel guilty buying all that candy? She said, at my age, I feel guilty about nothing. Why do you have to wait to 90 to feel guilty or not to feel guilty? You see, you can stop that. If anyone's feeling guilty about anything, stop it right now. Just stop feeling guilty. That was put upon you by somebody else. It was put upon you by somebody else. And then your mind keeps repeating that and keeps telling you that you're guilty for something. And you're not guilty. You are completely innocent. You are completely innocent. And that's what you have to remember. How many people are still doing wonderful, wonderful me? You cannot do wonderful, wonderful me and feel guilty. So you can't be wonderful and guilty at the same time. So get rid of guilt. Let me talk a minute about the cross, the old rugged one. And it was a torture device. So if you think of this one, if Jesus were here today and they electrocuted him, would we be wearing little electric chairs around our neck?
How about lethal injection and a little syringe?
And would we have little electric chairs on top of churches instead of a cross? And instead of doing the sign of the cross, would we go...
you got to be fair. I mean, most people look at the cross and think of Jesus and think of it as love.
it's the other half of the coin. Everything is always, that's the dichotomy that we live in. But the thing is, I'm more interested in the people that look at it as guilt, because it's not getting them anywhere to look at it. You see, this whole thing of guilt is not necessary. It's not necessary.
Dallas, may I say something
about that? They're looking on it as love because Jesus took our sin. So it was his love to take on the sins of the world so he would suffer. You know, so that whole thing. And so if you're in Catholic or Episcopal church, you see the full cross with him up there in his suffering for you because you're not worthy. Only God can love you. So, you know, that's the whole message as he, you know, I mean, it gets to me. I mean, I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, when you
time.
Put something around your neck and you go to the store, you know, to buy a cross for someone and whatnot, I mean, it's a sign of love. In that respect, as far as people thinking, am I wrong?
No,
well, I don't think that you're wrong.
I think what I'm saying is you're stopping at the love, but I'm pointing out that it's the emblem of suffering and shame that Jesus did. So here, love me because I'm giving you this thing to remind you that you're not worthy. That,
yes.
I mean, I'm just continuing your story about I love you because you're not worthy, but God loves you. He lives up there somewhere. And the only way to get there is to accept that his son suffered in pain because you're not worthy, but he loves you. That's.
Oh, Tommy was next. I'm sorry.
In the real world, we often do things that do hurt other people. So what do you do with that?
See, you lost me when you used the word real world.
Well, perhaps that was wrong choice of words.
In your world.
Well, even in the metaphysical world, even in the world of primary meaning, we do sometimes do things that hurt other people.
We never do that in the metaphysical world.
No.
See, it's very easy to hurt. I could sit here and hurt every one of you. And I know exactly how to do that. Hurting things are easy. Healing things.
I know. How does that relate to guilt? That's what I'm asking.
Oh, when you hurt somebody?
Yeah, how does that relate? I mean, if
are you talking
you're
about
saying we're not guilty. There's no guilt.
There is no guilt. You're not guilty of anything.
Okay, so if you hurt someone, like you just said, you could hurt everyone in the room.
Right. But I'm choosing not to do that.
But you would not be guilty. But say you chose to do that. We're not, you know, I've not met anyone who has not hurt someone else in some way.
Yes, and they take on the guilt because society, the world says you have to be guilty. I went through a stoplight and they sent me a thing saying I'm guilty. Mm. What am I guilty of? I shall speak to them. I also will not pay that. I'll get out of that. And I'll tell you. We'll do that one later.
So is it just a matter of forgiving yourself?
Yes.
You
have to forgive yourself
instantly. Just let go
right away. And you cannot carry guilt with you. But guilt is man-made, and you just made it if you hurt somebody.
What about the other person?
Pardon?
What about the other person?
What, that you hurt?
Yeah.
Well, you have to do something about that, too. Make amends. You have to make amends.
What about the other side of the coin? What about if someone who is mean-hearted and enjoys... Thank you. saying then they're not guilty either. And
right.
Those types of people...
That's absolutely true. But those types of people, I don't know. You see, you cannot draw all that into you. You cannot draw that type of person into you. The more you get into this teaching, the more you realize that you are the one that's creating. You're creating everything that's outside of you. If a mean person comes to you, you have created that mean person because there's something in you that needs to know something. And the meanness in you, we all have meanness in us, even me. But you're doing that. So when we're in metaphysics, we do not associate with those people because we do not manifest them. We do not attract them into our life. There's a story about two metaphysicians in an alley, and muggers come. What do the metaphysicians do? A metaphysician would never be in an alley.
Where muggers are.
Where muggers are. They would never be there, you see. You don't have... They would never be there. I'll tell you a cute story. Does anyone know Peace Pilgrim? Peace Pilgrim was a lady. She's not with us anymore. She made her transition. She walked the country for peace. And she hitchhiked. And she got in a car with a man, and she could tell that he was going to molest her. So she immediately did treatment work. The man not only didn't molest her, he watched her the rest of her life come and help her with different things. He protected her after that. Now, that's the power that you have, but she had it. Now, I'll tell you something else, because there's always this flip side to everything. Peace Pilgrim walked all over the country and was never hurt walking and was afraid of cars. She was killed in a car accident. She was killed in a car accident. What you fear most will come upon you. And as strong as she was with everything, she could not get over that. She could not get over that. You look perplexed. Am I saying something that...
You know, I had a funny image in my mind about, I'm kind of an arachnophobic, spiders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spirals really end up killing me.
Well, I thought
it was funny.
The way mine would come on the website, I thought of the Stay Puft Marshmallow guy in Ghostbusters. You know, that's what that is. So, sorry.
But what you fear most will always come upon you. Now, let's get back to guilt a moment. If anyone here is harboring guilt or thinks that you're guilty about something, who gave it to you?
So.
The second time. The first time it comes from somebody. The second time it's you're doing it. Somebody told you, and you learned. You see, and then we keep that just going in our lives, feeling guilty about. You don't have to feel guilty about a thing. As I said, if my aunt at 90 says, at my age, I feel guilty about nothing. Can't you feel guilty about nothing at any age? You have to wait to 90? Do you don't feel guilty about things anymore, do you? No, because you've reached an age where, what the hell, right? Yeah, so that's right. So what? And that's what you have to say to yourself and not let your mind and not let that get in there, that guilt. Because it'll hold you back from everything.
I was just going to say, relative to your aunt eating all the candy or buying it all, there are some studies that have shown that if we eat something that technically we're not supposed to, that technically would increase cholesterol, and maybe we're dealing with that, although I know we could probably disappear it. People who give themselves permission, I'm going to eat this steak now, or I'm going to eat this candy now, or whatever, and eat it without guilt, it is metabolized differently.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I gave up eating red meat. And people say, oh, because you're a vegetarian. I gave up eating a red meat because the animal is killed under trauma. So that trauma is then in that meat of that animal. I'm not worried about the antibiotics. But I don't want that trauma in me, that terror in me, because I'm eating it. So, make sense? So we have to think of those things, what we're doing to ourselves.
I have a question. I think you made a choice to say red meat, but
yes.
Aren't all animals that are killed in some trauma or another?
There is a way to do it where they're not, you know. I mean, I'm talking about slaughterhouses. I'm talking about that where they all know and all this, that, and the other thing. I lived on farms where they killed animals to butcher them. It was instant with them. And I'm sure what's Rhoda's husband? If he were here, he could explain to us how they killed animals. The rabbi would kill animals. It has
That's
to be.
That's what I was going
to
say.
It's done with one stroke.
Right. They cut their throat and they leave the blood flow out.
Yeah.
And then there's not much blood in the
right.
body. So then they use it.
Yeah.
That's what they call kosher.
Right. But they're done in a humane way. I saw the Trader Joe's used to have duck. And it disappeared off the shelf. And I said to the man, what happened to the ducks? He said some customer complained and discovered that the farm we were buying them from wasn't killing them humanely. So we took them off till we find somebody that knows how to kill them humanely. Now, I don't know how you kill anything humanely, people. But
syringe.
But I know that in slaughterhouses, if you've ever seen them, it's horrible.
There is an autistic woman who's gone around because she's able to visualize things the way they do, and they've designed different systems. I don't know how they handle the fact that animals do smell, you know, things that let them know. But
she's changed
but
the other, ramp.
Yeah, so that they aren't looking. She was realizing that a lot of what terrifies them is certain shapes that they're seeing things like that, and she's worked with them. But I was going to say, I do know from deer hunters that they talk about how you really want to get your deer the first day out, because after a few days, they've been running from, and they say it's galactic acid building up from running, but that the meat doesn't taste as good in the days after the shooting begins.
Well, back to guilt. How many people here feel guilty about money?
Well, I guess I do. Because, and I'll use the past tense, I haven't seemed to have enough of it. And I've deduced that that's because I feel guilty about having it. I found myself in my affirmations, if it didn't work in a week or so, I started bargaining. I'd go for less and less and less, hoping that if it went for a lesser amount, it would come more easily.
That's the world. And you're using the world way of thinking. And what do we say here?
More,
please. Now, when you changed your affirmation, did you change it to money is always freely circulating in my life, and I always have a divine surplus? Or something similar to that, because, so that your mind doesn't say, I don't have money. It's impossible not to have money, people. It's impossible not to have money. Would you tell the story about you thought it was just raining $100 bills?
Yeah.
when they were paying you.
Oh, yeah, it was just silly. I have this job. I kind of forget how I described it or how it was, but it was just silly. And then it's just through this doing this work and stuff, I feel not so bad about asking for more money and stuff. So they wanted me to do this extra little job, and it's like a music video or something, and they wanted me to push a button. So I said, I think that requires more money. Of course it does. And so I just said I asked for it. And when he said I'll take care of you, I didn't. Normally I get into fear and oh that's bullshit. He's gonna hand me a candy bar. It's bullshit. but he did. I just stayed in faith and I just was really clear about it. And then the end of the night came and I just said. And I just stayed in faith and instead of my usual fear and terror, which ends up getting me to not have any money. And, he said, all right, we want to stay a little later. Can you do that? And I said, well, let's take care of the money now, which is usually it's difficult, And he just said, here. And he was like, he gave me like $400 or something. And I said, thank you. That's awesome. And then I think I asked for more, please. In addition to that, and he said that's all or something for now. And then I just stayed in positive and stayed in faith. And then they just literally were just at the end of the night just throwing $100 bills at me. It was just silly. So sorry, I don't know where that. It's fun. It's all more please. It's all faith, and it just keeps coming all the time. Yeah.
Money is never the problem. The world would like to tell you that money's the problem. Your mind would like to tell you that money's the problem. But that is not so. It's what you're thinking that is the problem. She stayed in faith and got her money. A year or so ago, she'd have said, oh yeah, they're going to give me a candy bar. And they would have given her a candy bar, a pat on the back, and said, nice job. You get what you ask for in your mind.
Is this teaching, on the surface I could think, well, I want things, but the real thing is there's a second underlying dialogue that the real thing I want is maybe pity or someone to feel sorry for me or to take care of me. And the thing is
I hate that underlying thing.
That underlying is really that's why I'm here, is to
get rid
turn
of
the
that.
Light on to that
yes.
underlying, to bring it
yes.
out, because it's very tricky that intellectually I'm very clear listening to it all, but I down deep there's that little
So you have to make a flip-flop.
Yeah.
And you have to put this down deep. You see, that remember the girl said, I'm dabbling in this. Well, it won't get you anywhere to dabble in this. Part-time efforts produce part-time results.
But is that why that buried thing, that primal belief that's embedded in me that I'm trying to kill, is that why it's like I'm saying it?
Yes.
How come it's not happening? Is that the deal?
That is
here?
One of the deals, because any belief that's already in operation will take precedent over any new belief. You have to get rid of it completely. That's why in the Bible it says you cannot put new wine into old wine sacks. People come in here with, oh, I can't do this, or it's in the family, or it's hereditary, or it's this, that, the other thing. That's a belief system. And that's all that is a belief system. I say all these things, and you want to lay it on top of that belief system. You have to get rid of that belief system. You have to get rid of it completely. And you're operating from an archetype of victim. And you have to get rid of that. We do not teach victim here. We teach people to be victorious. and you must learn to do that, and you will learn to do that. That's an atmosphere that's out there in the world, to feel pity and want pity, you see. It won't get you anywhere sitting on the pity pot. Nowhere.
I also heard when she was describing herself going through this, that there's not an agreement with her head and her heart.
Yes.
Yes. She said, you know, I understand it logically and so forth, but then her heart's saying that I don't deserve this or whatever it's saying. And there has to be an agreement.
Yeah. See, this is called science of mind, but it should be called science of the heart. It's nice to have all these thoughts, and it's nice to use this mind, but it's your heart that's going to do it for you.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
Now, if you don't have a mind...
If you don't have a mind?
Well, I was very young when I went through the concentration camp. I got out of it. I had no money whatsoever. None of it. No clothes, no nothing. And I was 17. I went to restaurants. I was hungry. So I stopped in the restaurant, and I said, they give me a menu, and I read the menu, and I knew I didn't have any money. So I let them serve me the food. And after I got through, I said, I'm sorry. I don't have any money. I could give you this sweater, what I'm wearing, if you want to. And they said, no. It's okay. Then, from there, I went to a bus. I had not a penny, and I knew where I was going, and the conductor came, and he says, where's the ticket? I have no money. So he says, but you'll have to get up. Oh. And I said, well, just let me go a little longer, maybe somebody, da, da, da. Anyway, this was all of my mind. I've done it, and it came out exactly the way I wanted.
Yes. Did anyone hear the main thing that she said? The main thing that she said was, I knew where I was going. You see, you have to know where you're going. As soon as you know where you're going, the things will come. But most people don't know where they're going. And most people would say, oh, I can't go in a restaurant and do that. Can't get on the train and do it. She knew where she was going, and she got there. And that's mind power. Once you make a decision, the whole universe comes and backs you up in that decision. As soon as you make anything like that, the universe is prepared to fill it for you and to give you all the things that are necessary for that to come. But you have to make the decision, and you have to know where you're going. Very simple teaching, but very difficult for people because the world tells you it can't be done, that it can't be done. And there's enough stories in this room that you know that it can be done. And all we have to do is keep doing it and keep believing it. And now, you're all right, aren't you?
Yes.
And you forgave all the concentration stuff. Yes.
I don't think that.
No. And that's another wonderful thing. The past will not do anything for you. It's the present, and it's living in the now, that will do it for you and will carry you into the future. So we get rid of the little things that are nagging us, especially guilt and shame, which are similar to each other. But shame is even sometimes even worse. I was watching something when I was surfing that television set. Some woman was going in for a breast reduction. because she felt ashamed of her breasts. And then she made the statement, she said, and I think maybe my husband will be ashamed of me if I have these big things. Well, you don't know what other people's shame is, but how can you be ashamed of your body? You know? How can you be ashamed of your body? You cannot be ashamed of your body. And we have all these people that go to the different 12-step programs and so forth because why? They're usually it's because they're ashamed of their body. If you would start loving your body, the weight or whatever you're trying to get rid of would melt away. It would go. So what are you remembering? That you're worthy, you're deserving, and you're completely lovable. And when you know that, the rest takes care of itself. But the more you hold in your mind that you hate your body, the worse it's going to become for you. The worse it's going to become for you. Next week I'm doing a thing on health. And I have wonderful things for health and how to look at your body differently and how to look at different health things differently than the world or that you yourself. Because we're convinced of that. I'll tell you a cute story. I was going to use it in health, but I'll use it now. So Aunt Catherine, who's now 93, goes to a clinic because they think she has a little bit of sugar. Yes. With a cartload of candy, I suppose so. So the nurses at the clinic say to her, ha, good genes, good genes. She looked at him, she said, don't you think attitude has something to do with it? See, the medical profession doesn't think attitude has anything to do with anything.
Oh. I beg to differ, having been a nurse. When people came into our to critical care, I mean, I agree with you.
Up to a point.
Well, yeah. Except that we also will look at people, and if someone came in with a heart attack, the ones who were fighting us or angry about it or feisty even if the damage to their hearts, you know, the damage was worse, we were much more worried about the people who came in with just this passive, it's God's will, it's just going to be this attitude of just clinically was so much more effective in getting them through things. I mean, not that some of them didn't do worse, but the ones who didn't have any fight in them were really worrisome.
How many people know what God's will is?
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, let me straighten up before you tell me. Go ahead.
That's what's happening.
Well, you could use that. No one knows what God's will is. God's will is your will. God's will is your will. Why is that so? Because all you are is God, but you are not all that God is. There's not your will and God's will. There is only your will. You see, if you think that God has a will and you have a will, what does that do?
Separation.
It causes separation. And that's what the world teaches, is separation. Guilt and shame separate you. What I'm guilty about, I think, oh my, isn't that awful? If I ask you what you're guilty about, it's completely different. It's completely different. It's man-made. It's made up in your own mind. There's no such thing. You had a revelation.
Why am I so afraid of taking that hair coat off? If you said, here, I'll take this away from you, Carol. I'm split because
Because you don't want to give it up. You're used to it. You're comfortable with it, and you don't want to give
it
up.
That's terrifying.
Just take your coat off and throw it away.
I feel like, you know, like Billy Graham, come down, and I can't. I'm standing here. Why is that? Is that just me, or is that typical? Is that
well, that's very typical, by the way. Especially if you think of Billy Graham.
That's
enough to give me a heart attack.
Dallas,
yes.
You made the comment about your aunt 93 and said, don't you think attitude has something to do with it?
Yes.
Which is very reminiscent to Mae West, goodness had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
Which makes me aware, because on Sunday night, one of the PBS stations will run a documentary on stars. And a few weeks ago, it was on Mae West and her attitude. And her attitude was so incredibly positive all the time.
Yes.
On everything. I mean, it's such a surprise to stop and think from where she came from, but she just expected that the normal rules didn't apply to her.
That's right.
And I don't mean that, you know, she's so famous as being a sex star that we think, I mean that. No, she means that she could live without a man and do business and own property. And she came out here after being big on Broadway on a couple of plays and came out here to Paramount Studios, which is nearly flat broke. And they asked her what she wanted for her salary. She said, how much does the president make for the company? He said, $250,000 a year. She says, then I want $250,001 because I want to be the highest paid on this lot. She only made 6 films for him but saved him from bankruptcy.
Yes.
And she took that money and just did things because she didn't believe she couldn't.
Yes. Because she knew where she was going. And she certainly didn't use any guilt or any shame, because she wrote a play called Sex. It was titled Sex,
yeah.
And that's the one that ran on Broadway.
It got her arrested.
Yes. And she did strange things in that day and age that women or most people wouldn't do, you see, because our culture, the world outside, always keeps us in control. The world is the one. Why do you think we're all wearing clothes?
Because my hair coats up the clearance.
Yeah. No, but we wear clothes. Why? Because in the garden, guilt and shame. Shame came up in the garden when they saw each other. Went, ooh, God, get a leaf. You know?
Well, I want to get back to the symbol of the cross as the symbol of shame and what was it?
Suffering.
And shame. That was the point, is because what he was teaching was so revolutionary that the people that had the power felt threatened, because he was teaching that they didn't have the power, that you had your own power. And that was chaos and anarchy to the people that were trying to control everybody. So what they had to do was shame him and torture him and humiliate him to make his message shameful.
This man Jesus would have not been crucified if he would have stayed out of politics. But he got political.
That's right.
And they didn't like that one bit when he got political. So they got rid of him. I'm trying not to become political.
did he get political, or was he just politicized?
No, he got political. He got political, and that's what happened. And
I thought he said, you know, render unto Caesar.
Give Caesar what is Caesar's. Yes, he did say that, but he did a lot of other little things that aggravated them to no end.
Okay.
But it is a yes, and Jesus brought into the world, whether you think that he was the Savior, difficult for me, he brought a covenant into the world, the covenant of love. Before that, in the Old Testament, there was no such thing as love. It's only in the New Testament that we find love. Because because the Old Testament God, and there are two gods in the Old Testament, by the way, if you read it.
God of wrath.
Is exactly. Because that God was always out to get you. Does anyone think God's out to get you? Besides Maud or somebody like that? Who used to say that?
It was the Flip Wilson character.
Oh,
Geraldine.
Geraldine.
Devil made me. But I always said devil made me do it.
So
God's going to get you for that.
God is not going to get you for anything. God is not here to get you. God is here to give you. And God wants to give you the kingdom. God wants to give you everything. Because you are the beloved in whom he is well pleased. It can be no other way than that. Because the creator and the creation are one in the same thing. Are one in the same thing. And can you see, and I use this all the time for health or for anything, do you think God gets sick? An impossibility. Do you think God has guilt or shame? An impossibility.
But there's something in my heart that feels that God weeps at certain things.
God can never show emotion. God is impersonable. We make God personable. And each and every one of us does it in a different way. Because God is everything. God is all there is. And you can think that God weeps. The reason why God does not weep is because God does not have eyes. God does not see except through me. God sees through each and every one of us. Our eyes are the eyes of God. But God per se does not have eyes. God does not have hands. God is not anthropomorphic. The church would like you to think that there's an old man sitting up in heaven sweeping the streets of gold. It's not true, people. God is pure energy, pure power, pure intelligence, beyond our scope of understanding. Beyond our scope of understanding. Because God is infinite, and we are finite. But we can get all those qualities and have all those qualities by bringing the finite down to the infinite. But most people want to take the finite up to the infinite. It doesn't work that way. You see. So just think of when you're doing that, if you're feeling guilty or something, say, does God feel guilty? I don't think so. Well, therefore, I'm not going to feel guilty. You know, and your mind will tell you, and other people around you will say, well, you should feel guilty about that. You did this, this, this. I had a woman once in a class. This was in Tennessee. And she bounced a check. She felt so guilty, she said she cried, hit herself. She was not only guilty, she was also ashamed. She hid herself in the bathroom and cried for hours because she bounced a check. So what? Right? Who gets upset over that? Maybe the bank. But you don't have to feel guilty. But we're made to feel guilty about that. We're made to feel guilty that we didn't get the right grade. We're made to feel guilty. The world makes you feel guilty if your teeth aren't white enough. And it makes you feel ashamed. My body isn't just quite right. Now I have to be ashamed of it. You do not have to be ashamed of anything. It's man-made. It's a learned thing. Don't do it to yourselves. And if you want money in your life, get rid of any idea that money is guilty. And I hear people say that. Oh, if I had that much money, I'd feel guilty. Why? Because they think that person got it in the wrong way, you're saying. Or they say, oh, that's dirty money. There's no such thing as dirty money. If it is, bring it to me. I'll wash it. No such thing as dirty money. The person may be dirty. The activity they're doing may be dirty. But the money's not dirty. The money's not dirty at all. So don't let those thoughts come into your head about that. And if you were taught that as a child, or you hear that from your parents, make a note to get rid of it. That's their thinking. That is not your thinking. You can learn to change any thinking. You can learn to become anything that you want to become. And you do it with your thinking. And you certainly do it with the affirmation, wonderful, wonderful me. And then to remind yourself that you're completely worthy. You deserve. And you're totally lovable. You're totally lovable. Each and every one of you. So learn that about yourself. And give up the guilt. And give up the shame. Are there any questions?
I don't have a question, but I had a little revelation a couple of months ago. And always wondered, you know, I've made like decent money all my life, but there's kind of like this cap that I've never really broken through. And of course, then moving out here to California, kind of left a career and kind of started over. So then, you know, there's been that little struggle. But I realized that it isn't the making of the money, it was paying the IRS. I don't like paying the IRS.
That's one of the biggest ones. I had a woman the other day say to me, I have tons of money. She said, I don't mind paying my taxes, and they're over $100,000. You must never be afraid to pay the taxes, because that means you're making money to pay them. So you, the more money you pay, people say, well, I'm not going to make any more money because the government
will take it.
The government have it.
Yeah.
Look what they do for you. We have the best roads in the world. Look at all the money. It does do something. Yes, it goes and buys a $400 hammer, but it still does a lot for us. You cannot do that to yourself. And that stops so many people because they do not want to pay taxes to the government. Pay your taxes. If you can pay $100,000 in taxes, how much money do you think you made? You see? So give. That's the one. Give Caesar what is Caesar's.
Since then, I've had the most amazing 2 months.
Yes, as soon as you changed your mind.
I changed my mind about 2 months ago.
Did everyone hear that?
Yep.
That's,
so you're happy to pay your taxes?
Right. That's one. No. You must be happy to pay.
No, you know, Kenna said something the other day. She was talking about that she has the scholarship fund and all of that, and she says, and I made a comment. I said, I didn't know about any scholarship fund. You know, like, you know, why didn't you tell me? And she says, well, you know, some people can't pay. And I said, well, you know what? I can pay, and I'm glad to pay. I'm happy to write that check, that I can actually do that. And when I pay bills now, it's like I'm happy. Wow, I can write this check and not worry about it as much.
I remember having a period like that where it was fun to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Well, then bring that back.
Yeah.
If you have it once, you can regain it. So sit down and think of how you
felt. I paid it today and it felt good.
But think how you feel about that. It's the feeling, people, that will bring it to you. So when you say IRS and paying the taxes, don't begrudge that. Be happy to pay it. Be happy to pay every bill that comes in. Earlier I said, money is God in action. When I pay my light bill, I don't do like my father saying, oh, you're supporting the utility companies, turn off the lights. I run around turning on all the lights. you know, my it doesn't ever seem to phase the bill to me, you know. No, it doesn't. It only seems to stay the same, so who cares? But the point is, I pay that bill, and I think, Casey, I said that to you once, and you said you do too. When I pay the bill, and remember, we write on it, God bless and multiply mm-hmm. this money quickly so that it will come back to me. On the way to the mailbox, I kiss it many times and say, oh, thank you. Put it. Why? Because that money is now going out to feed a family. That's God in action. How do you think God feeds? Do you think God throws stuff down? No. But through that, people get fed, things get done, and that money keeps circulating and keeps doing things. And that's what you must see the whole thing as, circulating and going out and so forth. What did Hello Dolly say? Money's like manure. You have to spread it around.
It isn't any good unless it's helping little things grow. Yes.
Money's like the wind. You can't feel it unless it's moving.
So do it. But be happy every time you pay a bill on tax, especially if you get to the point where you're happy about paying that, you'll make even more money. Mm-hmm. You'll make even more money. Don't begrudge people things. Because why do you not begrudge something? If you think you have that feeling you're begrudging.
You're begrudging yourself.
It's like constipation of the energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's nothing outside of you. I always hate to go into this one, but I'll do it, try to quickly. There's nothing outside of you. Do you know what that means? You can't begrudge somebody else. Because when you do, it's you you're talking about. Your mind does not know ever that you're talking about somebody else. If you say that guy's a dumb shit, yeah. Your mind says, that's right, you're a dumb shit. The mind will not go outside of itself, people. I could tell you even treatment doesn't do that, but we'll get into that later. Nothing goes outside of you. Nothing goes outside of your mind. It just is an appearance that it does that. So give up that.
Is it the mind or the heart hearing it?
Well, that's the mind doing that. The heart only knows love. And you weren't around for this heart and mind thing. I'll do a heart and mind thing again. You're still reading about the heart. The heart is the most amazing thing. It throws out energy. And some people can go, they can measure it 8 feet in front of them. The energy from your heart. They also have discovered that there's a small brain in the heart. Of course, they're now discovering that, you know, your whole body thinks. You know, we think it all that this, but your whole body's thinking. Your consciousness, people. You cannot be separated. I'll do a quick one with Deepak Chopra was speaking at Harvard University, where I'm sure he graduated from, and his brother is there also. And he was talking in an assembly of doctors, and he was talking about the body-mind connection. When he was finished, a doctor came up to him and said, I just don't believe there's any connection between the body and the mind. And Deepak said to him, well, then how do you move your toe? How do you move your toe? You have to think. Want to move your finger? You have to think, I'm going to move my finger. The body must always follow the mind. If that weren't so, your legs would give up and walk away from you. I think you people are absolutely wonderful. And I know that I am. And there ends the lesson. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a sign-in sheet there and this basket for donations for Dallas's class.